Welcome to the Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to the laboratory accreditation industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you'd like to tune into our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjlabs.com or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our webinar on an update to the AOAC international methods in the cannabis industry. Next slide. My name is Tracy Serzin. I am the president of Perry Johnson Laboratory Accreditation. We thought this webinar would be useful for those that are working in the cannabis space. We've been accrediting cannabis labs for years with some challenges that we all are facing in regard to the development of in-house methods, and have been closely paying attention to the industry, what's now going to be available to the laboratories down the road. AOAC has developed a working group that we're going to be talking about today and giving everyone an update on what that working group has done over the past few years and how they come about developing standardized methods for the cannabis industry. We recognize that not all the analysis for these testing laboratories have been completed yet, but we're very pleased to see that there are some standardized methods and assistance for the laboratories. So what we're going to talk about today, I want to talk about what 17025, we'll just touch upon that a little bit, about what the requirements are in regard to methods. And what our expectations will be in the future as we start seeing recognized, standardized national methods that are available for the laboratories. Most of our webinar today will be focusing on, again, the work of AOAC through the Cannabis Analytical Science Program called CASP to educate those listening to the webinar today on what methods are now available. And then we're going to have time for questions and answers at the end. You'll see on your far right toolbar there a section to type in questions. So we ask that if you think of something through the course of the webinar, go ahead and type them in. I might actually be answering some of those, responding back to you if I can answer something quickly, or we'll wait to the end if the question is directed at our guest speaker today. Next slide. Next slide. Just some webinar housekeeping. If you noticed, everyone is muted. So we use the question toolbar as a resource for you to, again, ask any questions towards the end. This webinar is recorded and will be available for everyone to download if you can't stay on today or you want to pass it on to anyone in your company if they're interested to hear what we have to say today. All the webinars are available on our website. And again, you know, please feel free to utilize that question toolbar so we could entertain those questions and have a good discussion at the end. Next slide. So just a brief overview. Some of you might be already aware, PJLA has been very involved in the cannabis industry really since 2010 when we started hearing about laboratories wanting to become accredited for this. We were a little hesitant at first how this was all going to work, but we had the opportunity really to accredit the first laboratory in the U.S. In California back in 2014. We now have 100 plus accredited cannabis laboratories and a lot of laboratories that are still in the application stages, depending on, you know, what state they are located in. Some states are still in that process of licensing laboratories. But we're pretty busy in this industry. I'm very interested and intrigued by what's happening. And I think it's great that we're, you know, able to have Pat here today, who I'll introduce in a few, on educating us on what's happening with the standardized methods. The typical scopes that we accredit for is listed here, mainly potency, solvents, pesticides, heavy metals, mycotoxins, water activity, microbiological areas, filth and foreign matter in some states. So those are the typical areas that we're accrediting in. Also sampling requirements have been something we've been asked to do. Some of our challenges are, accommodations we have for our laboratories is to quickly, do scope expansions for those that have state requirements or updates. We recently had one that have requirement to update a particular matrix and beverages. So we've been reviewing those pretty quickly to make sure their scopes reflect the state requirements. Next slide. So I wanted to talk about 17025, just to go over the requirements and how this AOAC update we're going to do today will relate to this. So if you read 17025, section 7.2 is the requirements for the selection, verification, and validation of methods. So as I stated earlier, many of the cannabis laboratories, were forced to do the validation of their own in-house methods using criteria that's available in the industry or maybe other industries such as food or environmental to develop a method that's fit for the use of their test. But the 17025 standard does state that, the methods need to be appropriate for that test. They should be updated and available to all your personnel. And laboratories should use the latest version of the method unless it's not appropriate to do so. So if you read into the standard, it doesn't say you must, but it does say it's a recommendation to where there are published methods, either through regional, national standards. So AOAC would be an example that laboratories should use those standards. It still recognizes that it will accept in-house developed methods, and we're going to continue to still accept in-house methods. But just what the ISO standard is saying is that if there is a method that's available, method validation, if you review and you're familiar with what goes into validating a method and the upkeep, using a national standardized method means that it's already been validated. And we're going to be talking about the work that goes into that today to validate a national method. So I see that, maybe many laboratories may eventually over time utilize these methods, maybe dissolve the methods they have in-house if it's fit for use for them. Next slide. So again, some possible future state regulatory expectations, laboratories may in the future see that they're required to use these particular national methods that are available. And overall, I think that by using the national methods that the states do recommend or require, all labs use the same available method if possible, I think we'll start seeing a little bit of a equal playing field between all labs and consistent and reliable results. And potentially, if they're happy with the method, with our accreditation process, maybe laboratories will have a less rigorous process with being accepted by the state. These are all just things that I foresee. I'm not saying that the states are particularly saying this, but I do know talking to some of the states that are monitoring their cannabis labs, they definitely would like to see some more consistency. And I think having a national method amongst all laboratories would help that. As an accreditation body, we actually are starting to see laboratories use some nationally recognized methods. Again, we're accepting their prior methods they've had on their scope of accreditation where they have to validate the in-house test. But, we're starting to see that change slightly. And, as a recommendation, because we're getting a lot of feedback from the states and, we're here, go to a lot of conferences and hear a lot of things that, I don't want to say complaints, but challenges with the states is that's a little bit of the inconsistency among results. So I recommend that if you're listening today or later, that you really sign up to, AOEC to have an understanding of what's happening when they release like notifications or announcements about new methods being available. We are going to start doing that a little bit more often for the cannabis labs as we're attuned to them. But it's really good for labs to participate if you can. I know the AOEC is always looking for more assistance on these groups, but to just be attuned to what's happening. Okay, next slide. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome Pat Bird from PMB Biotech Consulting. Pat works with method developers, contract laboratories, and industry to identify solutions to emerging microbiological issues. optimizing method workflows and designing validation studies. Pat is an active member of the AOVC CAST initiative and previously serving as the co-chair of the microbiology contaminants working group and as a co-convener for several projects within the food micro method validation working group 3. Pat holds a Bachelor of Science in Microbiology from the Ohio State University and is a MS in Food Safety from Michigan State University in Lansing. So Pat, thank you very much for joining us today. I will now turn it over to you.
Thank you, Tracy. And I'd like to first start off by thanking PGLA for inviting me to speak and welcoming everyone to the presentation today. I'm going to be speaking about the role of AOAC in developing standards for the cannabis community. The presentation is going to be two phases. The first phase is going to be a little bit of background on AOAC for those that are not familiar with it. And then we will jump right into the CAST program and the workings of the CAST groups and what deliverables have been accomplished so far and where we hope to go in the future. So AOAC International is, I like to describe it as a platform. It's really an organization that tries to bring together all of the key stakeholders from various industries. So we try to identify government officials, regulatory, whether it's federal or state, industry, key companies, industry, large and small, as well as academia, contract laboratories, just experts in any particular field of study that is focused on the food and greater agricultural community. And the goal of AOAC is to publish, peer-reviewed standards and certified methods through a consensus-driven process so that testing that is performed, nationally or globally is conducted using what we like to say are certified methods that have been established following globalized standards. And so AOAC really tries to take a 360 approach to solving, while I say food safety issues, we are lumping cannabis into that. It's really part of our agricultural community and where we have built out our program as we saw a need. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about today is how AOAC establishes a program. And one of those programs, our cannabis initiative, CASP, has been extremely successful, and so that's going to be the crux of the conversation today. So AOAC has been around for close to 150 years, and it was originally established as an organization for chemists. And over the years, the name has changed, and right now our organization goes as AOAC International. And while so my role within AOAC International is I'm a technical consultant, so I help develop their programs and help methods go through the conformity assessment programs, which we'll talk about today. So just to give you a little background on myself and my role with AOAC, the objective of AOAC, as I said, is to build those unified standards through the development of our program initiatives. What does that actually look like? Well, the first thing AOAC does is they try to identify a community need. So while we have a strong, robust membership, those members, maybe specialize in a certain sector. And sometimes they're involved in other sectors that AOAC hasn't been involved with, such as the cannabis industry prior to 2018. So members of our community said, there's a growing need in the cannabis industry for universal standards, and since we don't have federal oversight to it, where we're seeing patchwork frames established within different states. So needs are identified, and then the next step is for AOAC to develop a program and solicit partners. And once that program has been funded, we'll reach out to recruit key stakeholders, as I mentioned previously. With the goal to establish working groups that can put deliverables together, such as validation guidance, acceptance criteria for conformity assessment, training and education programs such as webinars or white papers or on-site training for laboratories, and then ultimately to establish PT samples, proficiency test samples that could be used by our end users in our program. And through this, what we will do is we'll develop highly scrutinized methods through one of our three conformity assessment programs. And then ultimately, we have methodologies that are able to be used by end users that are accepted by regulatory agencies and industry and contract laboratories alike. So real quick, diving into these programs, when we say develop a program, you know, we want that 360 approach. So we want it to be horizon scanning. We don't just want to focus on the immediate concern. So when there was the issues with vaping about 2 years ago, you know, was that a concern for the cannabis industry? Was it a concern for a different industry? Now, something to that extent, you know, could be developed into a program, but then looking beyond that, are there additional concerns that that community may have? So within the cannabis industry, it could be, well, we need to have some sort of guidance on how we're going to establish potency in flower products. And what are the acceptance criteria? What is the percent recovery? What is the RSD that needs to be established for these? Can we set up PT samples? Can we figure out a way where we can have multiple vendors actually providing high THC cannabis versus hemp products as part of it, which is currently the process being used in PT? What kind of training and education can we put out there to really help the community? And is there opportunities for international harmonization? It's legalized in Canada right now, so we like to work with the Health Canada and the other organizations within Canada to try to establish harmonization in our protocols. Then we'll go out and we'll actively recruit volunteers. And this means the people that are on this call. I know that Tracy mentioned this in her introduction. We really want the key stakeholders. And key stakeholders, you may not feel like that if you're just, oh, we're a contract lab or we're a producer. No, you are key stakeholders to this industry. We want bottom up, top down, everyone to have a role in this, and joining our working groups and being part of these programs. When we talk about deliverables that we're going to generate, a key term we'll use is standard method performance requirements, so SMPRs. This is highly unique to the AOEC process, and it essentially allows us to prepare rapid documents that will provide analytical performance requirements for certain techniques, certain commodities, certain analytes. So they're a lot easier to develop in a working group than a validation guideline, which could be universal to all types of technologies or analytes. And so SMPRs are something that we can craft in as little as 6 months to 2 years, where validation guidelines may take decades, such as some of the ISO standards that have been developed, as well as I mentioned PTs and training and education. When we talk about SMPRs, I have an example here where this is an SMPR for Salmonella and cannabis products. It's just the first page of it that was developed by our microbial contaminants working group. And these SMPRs, they prescribe the minimum requirements that a method needs to meet for our experts to say it's fit for purpose for use in industry without reference methodology. So there is no FDA BAM, there is no USDA MLG or their equivalent on the chemistry side, where we have these harmonized, collaboratively studied reference methods that we can compare candidate methods to. So without those, we need to establish performance requirements that methods need to meet to be certified. As I said, this is a unique process to AOAC. And we'll talk about all of the different SMPRs that we've crafted over the last couple of years since CASP has been going on. And I mentioned where we're in the process of developing one for yeast and molds right now, because that was a big role, especially in the state of Michigan, as the MyCell network up there was involved in an emergency response project we had for yeast and mold in cannabis flower. We'll talk a little bit about that in a couple slides. So once we have these SMPRs established, what do we do? And then we can take methods through one of our three conformity assessment programs. And so I love to use the term conformity assessment, but essentially that is a certification process for an alternative method. So when and alternative methods can be for the cannabis industry, they can be anything from a rapid diagnostic assay like an LC-MS or a PCR methodology, or it could just be a benchtop technology where it's traditional cultural, or it's something that any lab can do, such as a moisture content measurement method. So the first of our three programs I'm going to talk about is our official methods of analysis. So this is our premier methods program. So official methods of analysis, these methods, as I said, they can be any type of method, benchtop, instrumental, proprietary, or commercial. They are highly defensible in court. So they're recognized in the Code of Federal Regulations. Some of our official methods are actually in the Codex Alimentarius for the food as well. And I'll use the acronym OMA. The OMA program is really designed to evaluate all types of methods, chemistry, micro, molecular biology, that we use this, these type of methods. These have been, OMA methods have been around since the 50s that are still in place. And so they're highly credible and they're used throughout industry and regulatory. And then we have two additional programs that are put on through the AOC Research Institute. So the Research Institute is a division of AOC. It used to be its own standalone organization, but it was brought back into AOC International in 2017. And so the Research Institute uses the performance tested method, which is the PTM, and the reviewed and recognized, which is the R squared, programs to evaluate these are proprietary methods in a more rapid fashion than our official methods program. So the main difference between the PTM and R squared and our OMA program is that these methods are what we call single lab validation methods. So essentially all of the data can be collected in a single lab validation study, which does require an independent assessment of the performance of that method outside of the method developer. But there's not a need for a collaborative study, whereas our official methods require multi-lab study where you have anywhere from 10 to 20 participating labs. So within our these two programs, there is still a third-party peer review process as part of our certification. The SMPRs that are generated can be used to take methods through either the PTM and R squared or OMA process. So the only difference, as I mentioned, is that the OMA process requires that multi-lab component to it. And a lot of companies will actually use the PTM or R-squared programs to get an initial certification so that they can start selling their technology to end users with that stamp of approval. So as states are starting to say, we need to see AOC approval for methods, they can go through one of these two programs, achieve that certification, start selling their technology, their assays, and then move towards an official methods validation as well by adding a collaborative study at the later time. A majority of these methods are micro. So I would say about 80% to 85% are microbiology. And then we do have some chemistry methods. That is within our PTM program. The reviewed and recognized program is actually still in its pilot phase. So we have several methods going through it this year. And some of them are going to be looking at cannabis matrix. So we have some mycotoxin methods that we're going to evaluate. And there is a slight difference between them. The PTM program looks at essentially the easiest way to think of it is test kits or assays. So if you're selling a test kit or an assay as part of your end goal, then it goes through our PTM. The reviewed and recognized is more for application notes. So if you developed a method to detect mycotoxins on an LC-MS, then that would go through our reviewed and recognized program. And then they both can funnel, as I said, into the OMA. And so we have, I believe the number yesterday we had on our workshop was 341 certified methods now through the PTM program. And this goes back about 20 years. And we do still have some methods that are around from the early aughts. And then next year, when the reviewed and recognized is fully launched, we anticipate to build that up pretty quickly because we'll have 5 to 10 already established through our pilot program. One additional layer to the validation process is what we call an emergency response validation program. And we actually have a sister program called a targeted matrix response program as well. And these are really designed to meet emerging needs of an industry. So whether it's a new analyte that's being found, SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 came really out of nowhere and surprised everyone. And while it's not a foodborne issue, there was a need to evaluate it for production facilities. So an emergency response program was launched for that. Similarly, we launched one for total yeast and mold in cannabis flower. There was a lot of discussion about methods being used in the cannabis industry and were they fit for purpose. So AOEC launched a program to evaluate multiple yeast and mold methods. And I will say after 9 months, we have about 2 more weeks and then up to 6 methods will be announced as part of a certification announcement from AOEC on that. And as with any AOEC program, there is always an independent lab component that is required as part of the certification. So these conformity assessment programs were originally designed for technology providers. So a PerkinElmer, a Shimadzu, a Waters, or on the micro side, a bioMérieux or a Bio-Rad or a Medicinal Genomics. But we do have aspects of them, either through the PTM or reviewed and recognized, where an actual lab could have their own in-house method developed and certified as part of that process. It's something that we do anticipate cannabis labs will be interested in, because as we develop SMPRs, they may not want to take their method through the OMA program because your methodology becomes public. With the PTM and or R-squared, and we tend to think this could happen more with R-squared, with potency methods, pesticide methods, you're having an AOEC certified method that you don't have to actually publish the methodology, so your competitors don't have that, but you would have to publish the actual data and it would be certified through a peer review process. So we would still have an independent lab study as part of that. But that's where AOEC is uniquely designed, where we can validate commercialized methods, but we can also validate in-house lab methods as needed. So tying this all back together, what does this look like? Well, when we developed, we identified a community need. We knew the cannabis industry needed a standardized guidance. So we set out to develop our CASP program, and we recruited we worked about recruiting individuals and got funding for that. Then we established working groups and they started developing SMPRs and guidelines. And then within that, we've now taken several methods with those SMPRs and certified them through our OMA and our PTM programs and soon to be our R-squared. And occasionally, we can also get an emergency response like we have with the yeast and mold. And what we are going to be launching at the end of this month with a targeted matrix extension study, where we're going to be evaluating multiple methods for salmonella and sugar toxin producing E. coli at the same time. And if that's successful, then we may transition that into a mycotoxin evaluation as well. So that's the kind of the primer on AOEC and how we go about building these programs. And I gave you some of the details of the CASP program as we work through that, but I want to talk a little bit more about some of the specifics with CASP. So CASP was launched in 2018. It was originally launched with 3 working groups, one that focused on cannabinoids, one that was on chemical contaminants, and one that was on microbiology contaminants. And the idea behind the program was to develop the tools that weren't currently out there for the cannabis industry. So labs were doing a great job of testing, and they were trying their best to develop methods internally. But from a regulatory standpoint, there was difficulty in, reviewing one set of methods from one lab to another. There wasn't this harmonized, established guidance. So AOEC was using the CASP program, was designing to establish that to make it easier for everyone, because labs knowing what requirements they needed to meet makes it easier for them to, you know, fine tune their methodologies to meet that. And it makes it easier for regulatory to accept that data from the labs. And I want to recognize that the funding that has been provided by this, you can see this group up on the right-hand corner, they've been great at helping, you know, launch the CAST program and keeping it going for the last few years. So we started with those five working groups. We've actually three. We've actually added two more to the pipeline. So we've added a training and education working group. So rather than have the individual groups focus on training and education, we actually separated that out. And then we have a proficiency testing group. And so that PT group works with the AOEC PT program. And they're trying to harmonize the best approach to developing PT samples for the industry. I'll also say that our working groups have kind of evolved over time. So the cannabinoids and consumables is now focusing specific, while they first developed some S&PRs for potency, they then moved to moisture content. And now they're looking specifically at commodities. So they're looking at, okay, beverages, and how do we evaluate beverages properly? And so rather than being an end-all be-all S&PR that covers any type of product, it's very specific to, you know, a certain commodity. Whereas our micro working group is really, the way we develop it is looking at target analytes, and then we do, it's applicable to pretty much any method that's out there. So 2018, we launched. 3 years later, we have 11 S&PRs that have been fully developed and approved by our working groups. We have two official methods of analysis. So two OMAs, they're both chemistry methods. We have six methods that have gone through our performance tested methods program that are microbiology. We currently have seven methods in our yeast and mold project that are on pace to be certified. I believe five will be announced at the end of this month, and two will probably come in June, because we do have some delays with the review process and our experts that are reviewing it. And since I put together these slides, we actually have updates. So we have two additional methods that are looking at Salmonella and Steck and Aspergillus. So that's actually two for all of those as well on the micro side. These are more easy to track because they go through our PTM program, where a lot of the OMA data is collected internally until it's submitted to AOAC. So we may not be aware of other methods that are being developed by method developers until they set forth their application. Within the PTM process, there's a consulting component, which is one of my roles at AOAC to help develop those consulting outlines. So we're more aware of what's coming through the program. So when we talk about the S&PRs that have been developed, I've broken them down by micro and chemistry. So, you know, each of these is developed in a working group. We have 70 some members in our micro working group. I think that the two chemistry ones that we're working, the contaminants and the cannabinoids, each have as many, if not more, in there. So those are really the three working groups that are developing the S&PRs. The training and education and the PTs are not working as much on the S&PR component. They're working on additional guidance. So within micro, we've developed an S&PR for Aspergillus, Salmonella, Steck, which is our sugar toxin E. coli. We have mycotoxin screening. That was actually developed by our chemical contaminants, but it falls under our micro guidelines. And then we have an S&PR for total yeast and molds that was developed as part of our emergency response validation. And that public commenting on that ended last month. So we're hoping that will be approved sometime by mid-June. Now on the chemistry side, we have, you know, quantitation of cannabinoids and several different commodities. And then pesticides, residual solvents, and then heavy metals, and then I believe we have a moisture content that has been approved or is in the similar area with the total yeast and mold, where it will be approved soon. So these lists, it's interesting. I'll develop slides, and sometimes within a couple weeks or a month, there's already updates to it. All of these SMPRs are free. They're freely available. You can find them on AOEC's website. I'll actually have a slide for that later. And you can provide public comments, even if you're not a member of AOEC on this. So you, when we put out our call for comments on these, you can find that on the website and you can provide comments. And joining our working groups is free. So while we do get funding and we look for companies to fund us, it's the only way we can have our programs. Members, you're able to join even if you're not a member of AOEC. So when we put together these SMPRs, what do they actually have in there that sets them apart from, say, you know, another type of guidance? Well, we identify the specific analytes. So when we talk about a heavy metals, well, is it the big four heavy metals? Is there additional metals? I know cobalt has been something that I believe California is now testing for. Or Canada may have, you know, eight metals that they're looking to have tested. So we will specify what's required by methods to be certified against that SMPR and maybe what's recommended. And the same can be said for pesticides and cannabinoids. I believe there's eight cannabinoids that we require as part of our plant certification process, but then there may be, you know, 12 additional cannabinoids that we recommend methods, you know, be able to detect as well, but they're not a requirement. What matrices? So sometimes they're very specific. This is for hemp, this is for high THC cannabis, this is for this type of beverage. Others on the micro community, we actually establish categories. We'll talk about those. What's the system suitability? So what controls have to be embedded in the assay to make them appropriate? Are there any particular, you know, interference controls that have to be used to evaluate new matrices? Reference materials and guidelines. So where can you find reference materials, or how can you develop your own internal reference materials that meet, establish general best practices that would allow for the method to be used? What analytical techniques can be evaluated by this? This is more specific to our chemistry method, but, you know, for our metals, that was ICP, I believe, was ICP-MS was going to be the original thought process, but then they opened it up and they said any method that can meet the requirements of the SMPR, because while we're using ICP-OES and ICP-MS now to do metals testing, at some point we may use a different type of technology. And so we want to be open to that. Others, though, are more restrictive and say it has to be an LC method or a GC method. And then what are the performance requirements? So what's the acceptance criteria for an LOQ or an LOD? RSD, repeatability, you know, relative standard deviation of reproducibility, percent recovery, those sorts of items. On the micro side, it's very similar. You know, we do have what we say is our selectivity panels. So what organisms do we say that the methods need to detect, and what do they need to be able to not detect that are closely related or can be found in cannabis flower or in, you know, cannabis production facilities? How we categorize matrices and what the test portion sizes are with those. How we have to prepare the cultures to go into the product. So there are certain requirements for growing those cultures, stressing them, and what sort of equilibration and stabilization conditions they need to follow to really evaluate a matrix to then be able to say that, all right, if salmonella was in this flower, this is how we would anticipate finding it in the real world. It's not going to be healthy. It's going to be stressed. So this is how we are going to stress it prior to putting it in there. And then because we don't have reference methods and for micro, that's usually what our comparison is to, what's the cultural confirmation process that we're going to require so that we can evaluate presumptive results versus confirmed results? And we want to standardize that because we really want to do some extended enrichments, because there's rapid technologies out there. And we want to make sure that they're designed well enough that they can also, you know, detect the same strain that may take 72 hours to grow up in an enrichment, and they're saying they can do it without enrichment. All right, so when I talk about categories, this is specific to the micro group, but I find this interesting. We've established four categories within the micro community that companies can validate against. So plants and flowers, it's traditionally either, you know, high THC or low THC cannabis, so hemp or you know, high THC flower, and with a 10 gram test portion size. So that's larger than what's required by most states. And the idea is that we want to start to align our validation guidance with those established test portion sizes from similar industries. So USP requirements for botanicals is often 10 grams. So we wanted to align it with that, because if we do get federal oversight of this at some point, we want our methods to be accepted by the FDA or the USDA. So by establishing more rigorous test portion sizes, we can do that. It doesn't mean that end users have to test it at a 10 gram size. It just means that during the validation, we do require that for companies. Concentrates is 5 grams, infused edibles is 25 grams. Well, that's very similar to food products, so that's why we do 25, because it aligns with food guidance. And then non-edibles is, again, 10 grams as well. And that is what we see for, again, USP-type products. Most of the methods that have come through on the micro side have focused on flower. And we do have a few, though, that have looked at concentrates, but we have not certified anything for infused edibles or infused non-edibles at this time. So as I mentioned earlier, we have, you know, so many certified methods. So from our micro standpoint, we have three methods from BioMaryU and three methods from Bio-Rad that have met all the requirements for PTM certification. So you can see those on the left column on this screen. And then we have some additional data or additional methods that are being collected. And so traditionally we do not broadcast when we have methods in our program, but because we know method developers and regulators are asking, or sorry, laboratories and regulators are asking, well, what method's coming? Do you know when it's gonna be certified by? Can I provide some information to people in my community that yes, it's okay to continue to use this until, you know, so we have gone out and there's some extra methods that are in the essentially the data collection phase. And there is another PathoSeq, Salmonella, STEC multiplex as well that's in that data collection phase. So those are the methods right now that we have that are in the various either certified or in the data collection. I think there's a couple more that have just begun the process. So they didn't make it into the slide deck either. And then our official methods, as I mentioned, they're both chemistries. So they're focused on cannabinoids and, you know, dried flower and oils, and then dried plant materials, concentrates and oils. And so those, you know, the OMA methods, you have to publicly purchase. Sorry, you have to be a member of AOEC and purchase that to get the OMA methods. The PTM methods, you would just purchase through the method developer, but they do, all of the data is available on our website. Pardon me one second. Sorry about that. When you work from home and somebody comes and knocks on your door, you know, there's always a little bit of interesting things going on. So where do you find these methods? So our PTM methods is on our website database. And I have a link to that here that will take you there. And then you just can search within the matrix function. You could type in hemp or cannabis or concentrate, and any method that is approved with that will pop up. Similarly, on our OMA website, which is a different address. You can see that on the left-hand side of your screen. You can search for an OMA method using key phrases or the actual OMA number, and that will take you to what you're looking for. And then the SMPRs can be searched in the lower box. And as I said, the SMPRs are publicly available. The OMA methods you can pull up or find, you can at least search what the OMA methods are. But you can't actually access the methodology unless you are a member. So then just rounding out on a couple last points, within our reference materials, this is actually chaired by Dr. Walter Wilson from NIST, so the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And so he's coordinating the cannabis research program within NIST. And so they're figuring out the best way to develop a harmonized cannabis reference material. So right now, rather than a PT, they're offering what they call a QAP, a quality assurance program. And essentially, a lot of material is studied by NIST, and then that is sent out for to any lab that wants to participate. In this particular case, I believe it will be hemp, and they will then take all of that data that they receive, and that's how they kind of qualify the product that's in it, and then they can use it further to evaluate new technologies or new methods from labs. And they work hand in hand with the AVC Lab PT program because we are going to help, you know, offer that as part of our platform with NIST. And then our training and education working group, this is actually chaired by Dr. Tobias Still from PerkinElmer. And they're looking to put out as much information as they can to end users. And it can be anything from as basic as aseptic technique to, you know, how you develop system suitability according to one of our SNPRs. And right now, a lot of the work they've done, I've actually taken the lead on. So we've done a couple of webinars on how we develop standards within our micro community, our emergency response program for total yeast and molds. There was two parts to that. We've done some presentations on cannabis and micro at MJ BizCon and Analytical Cannabis West. And then we had our first CASP week at February. We had specific focuses on how you set up a cannabis lab, microbial contaminants, heavy metals, and there was one other category. So the first three of those are all available on AOEC's website. They're free. You can download any of the webinars and listen to them. The MJ BizCon and the Analytical Cannabis West, you have to get from their websites, and I believe you have to have attended that. We're also partnering with different groups. So we've signed a MOU with the Hemp and Cannabinoid Science Institute to work hand in hand on developing some standards for hemp. And we've also, we have within AOEC ALAC, which is a laboratory accreditation group that helps us develop guidance for labs, as well as our technical division on laboratory management that is being involved in this to help. And then lastly, you know, outside of the webinars, and so this is part of our training and education, but it's not, we have some focuses within CASP, is that we offer workshops. So yesterday we did one of our validation workshops, and it talks about the AOEC conformity assessment program, and then the technical requirements to validate against an SNPR, one of our guidance. And we have specific modules that we've developed for the cannabis community. So on our SNPRs, how you review the SNPR, what are the requirements for that? And then for laboratories, that's more specific a lot of times for method developers. And then how can you do method verification, you know, once you have that validated method? So we offer training on that as well. That's the end of my presentation, so we'll open it up to questions now, and you know, I will turn it back over to Tracy.
Okay, thank you, Pat. That was a really good presentation, a lot of information, but really educational. Even I learned a lot, actually, just from trying to grasp what's going on with AOEC in this group. And it definitely seems like a lot of work has been done, and appreciate the information. I do have, now is the time to go through some questions. Really just have a comment that from some members on the call that they definitely like to be more involved with the study groups for future micro methods. They were part of the Y&M yeast and mold group and enjoyed that. So it sounds like looks like we have some people that are familiar with this and looks like they're looking to join and help out in other areas. Okay, let me see if there's anything else from the audience. Okay, so we'll give it a few seconds here for people to plug in some questions. I do actually have a couple questions too. So going back to some of your slides, you know, when people, the ballots, so right now AOEC, what I'm understanding, has two fully validated methods, both in the cannabinoid area, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then what do you, you know, based on your experience, like how, what do you foresee the next validated method to be? I know you have some in that process with the SMRPs, right? What do you think the next one's going to be?
The next, what do I think will be validated for, you know, within the cannabinoid community? Within our chemistry group, we just have, so AOEC has four meetings, 4 weeks a year, where they like to have they call it their analytical science week. And within that week, the various, there will be working group meetings where there's kind of an overview of what the working group has conducted, but there'll also be expert review panels. And so these expert review panels are made up of, it's some of the same members of the working group, making sure there's no conflict of interest. We don't allow method developers to be part of it, but they will actually review methods during these weeks and scrutinize them to see if they are approved or if additional data needs to be collected. So within that, we had our week about 3 weeks ago. So usually it takes about a month after that to get approved methods. And then they'll get posted on our website. They go on our Spectrum newsletter. They're also, if you're a member of AOEC or you sign up to get our emails, they're broadcast to you through that. So I don't know the specific ones that are coming about, but usually we lag by about a year from what we've seen. So anything that was produced in 2019 is certified in 2020. Anything that is SMPR in 2020 is usually certified in 2021. So I would imagine we'll start to see heavy metals, pesticides, and maybe moisture content methods come through. The moisture content may be something where it's more done internally than it is externally, but it could be something where somebody decides to establish an official method. I do know that Eurofins is looking to submit a couple methods as well for more cannabinoid work. They have been one of the leading labs from a larger scale standpoint about producing methods. They're the authors of the cannabinoid OMA that was recently approved.
Great, okay. And then how many laboratories, how much testing is involved with these validation of methods? Is there a lot of laboratories that are all participating to come up with something that's going to be, you know, validated and useful for everyone, or how does that work?
We actually don't have enough laboratories, so we're always looking to recruit if people want to become an independent lab or at least a participating lab. So in the PTM and R-squared program, that data can all be collected by the method developer. My understanding, speaking to a lot of these method developers, is that they're actually not able to handle high THC cannabis at their facilities. So they're actually subcontracting that method development work to external labs. So a lot of the data is being developed at an external lab. And then there is a requirement for our PTM and R-squared that at least one other independent group evaluates a small portion of it. So it is less, there's a less amount of labs for that. Now, when we talk about our OMA methods, those cannabinoid methods, there would have been at minimum 8 different independent labs that would have had to participate. So if Eurofins was the coordinating group, they would have had to have 8 different labs collect data and submit it. That's the minimum amount. Almost every company, though, that I see usually collects between 10 and 15 data sets. Because just making sure that you don't have to repeat the testing.
All right. Do you know if AOEC is going to do any proficiency tests for these laboratories?
So yes, in conjunction with NIST, they will be launching a PT program. It'll either be at the end of this year or early next year. So AOEC has relied heavily on the It's one of the Silliker labs, I think now Mary U Nutrisciences, as the group that kind of prepares our samples for the AOC PT program, or at least the majority of those samples. So AOC will probably be relying on NIST to prepare the samples, but I know that they're also looking to partner with other groups. So we do want to identify organizations that would have that PT accreditation so that they can provide that sample fully accredited. But it won't be something that I believe will be offered till the very end of this year or early next year.
Okay. And then you mentioned, I noticed in one of your slides that you mentioned the AOAC ALAC requirements, and PGLA uses that a lot with the food and pharmaceutical. We do have certain states require laboratories in the cannabis space to become 17025 and also meet those guidelines. Do you know what that group particularly is doing? Are they adding requirements in there for cannabis facilities, or just aware that the standards being used for those types of labs?
That's a great question. So there is not a current working group right now that is doing additional guidance development for the SNPRs or for cannabis labs. So they are aware of the SNPRs that have been generated. So we've kind of reached out to the ALAC group. They're a part of AOC. But they're not, an AOC organization. It's an interesting process that it's comprised of volunteers within the AOC community. So they are working essentially to kind of better understand the SNPR, what our expert review panels are actually looking for. So when we had our cannabinoid SNPR that was from 2019 for hemp products, we actually had 8 methods submitted for the OMA program, and none of the methods were approved by ERP. So the ALAC community can then see what findings the ERP had and said, okay, why were these methods deficient? And then they can use that to then help laboratories, whether they'll be taking those methods and onboarding them or modifying them and what requirements they would need. So there's not any deliverables that are going to be coming from ALAC, to my knowledge, very soon. But they're working with that training and education group to see, okay, once we have these certified methods, what extra guidance should be sent out.
Great. Okay, we do have another question that came in, and maybe you can go back to the slide. I think you did list this, but someone had asked, do you have a list of approved methods? I think that was on one of your slides. I don't know if you can kind of go backwards to.
Yeah, I can jump back to that. So these are the methods right now that are approved. As of my knowledge, 158 on 513. I can tell you for certain that the microbiology methods are the certified ones, because these are the I was the program manager for each of these assays, because I've been leading up the micro side. We could have at our last ERP added another OMA method to this, and that would be available within a couple of weeks on our website. It does take a little bit of time to get it in the right format once it has been approved.
Okay, thank you.
And okay. these two OMA methods were actually, these helped trigger, some of the CAS program, because as we were getting questions for cannabinoid testing, it helped us launch our CAS program. So these were actually developed, I believe, prior to the SNPR that was prepared. So there may be a review process where they go back and they study them to see if extra data needs to be collected.
Okay. And then we just got a general comment, someone thanking you for your time. Information was valuable and appreciate all the work that's been done. So that's great. Okay. I don't think I have any more questions. At this point, I just wanted to let everybody know Pat will be joining us again next month. Please sign up for the next webinar in June. We're going to be talking about challenges in the cannabis industry for micro testing. Same type of format, just an hour long, and just to give you some discussion and challenges from his experience that we've seen in the industry. So please sign up for that. If there's no other questions, I wish everyone a great afternoon and enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you very much, Pat. Everyone have a great day. Take care.